Jedi had carried aboard the Death Star on his final mission, a weapon reasonably thought to have been lost when the asteroid-sized spacecraft had been destroyed. The Skakoan was a known quantity. Herm Mawar was a bounty hunter with decades of experience, known for returning to his home system and spending years as an elected member of law enforcement between bouts as a bounty hunter. The YVH droid, fourth on Jaina's list, was the one who caused her the most concern. It was not a droid at all. Brannon Vax, a human mercenary from Dorvala, had distinguished himself during the Yuuzhan Vong War, but had been horribly burned and maimed during a personal shuttle crash late in the war. He chose not to replace with prosthetics the two-thirds of his body that had been irreparably destroyed. Instead, his family, a wealthy mining clan, had somehow acquired a black market YVH-1 droid and had it repurposed as a cybernetic body for Vax. All that remained of his human self was packed into the droid torso. Only because there wasn't as much room with Vax's carapace as there was in genuine YVH droids was he less formidably armed than a true hunter droid, and he more than made up for it with human experience and ingenuity. Jaina had received a report that he had survived Leia's laser attack on him and was already repaired and back on duty. Jaina brought up the file of the next bounty hunter, the Rodian sniper, but her door chimed. Absently, she said, "Come." The door hissed open, and her brother, Anakin, dead these 16 years, walked in. Jaina froze, a chill running down her spine. This wasn't Anakin as she remembered him. 16 and dressed in Jedi garments. He was older, fully adult, and taller, perhaps even a centimeter taller than Jason had been. He wore street clothes in black and crimson, and had a professional-quality holorecorder on a strap around his neck. He also wore Anakin's smile as he advanced on her, hand outstretched.
"Jedi Solo?"
She stood and automatically took his hand. When their palms came together, she realized, with distracted embarrassment, that hers was sweating.
"You probably don't remember me. It's been more than 15 years.
He absently wiped his palm on his tunic.
"My name is Dab Hantak."
Dab Hantak? Some familiar element in the name kick-started Jaina's brain.
"I know that name. During the war, the Yuuzhan Vong War, I mean, I was kidnapped by Senator Vikui Shesh."
Jaina sagged just a little in relief. The mystery solved.
"And you were used in her plot to try to kidnap my cousin Ben." "That's right. You might remember me better as Tark, the name she gave me."
"Right, right. Little Tark." Jaina sat and made an effort to reassemble her shattered Jedi calm.
"Have a seat."
Dab glanced around. There was no other chair. He smiled again.
"I'll stand, thanks. What can I, what are you... I've been assigned to you."
From his belt, he unclipped a small identification folder and opened it. On the left side was the circular shield of an Alliance Marshal. On the right was an identicard with a hollow of his face, name, and vital statistics.
"I'm really a documentarian, but also a licensed investigator, because that helps, and there was just a mad hiring scramble for people with certain skill sets and any experience with the Jedi."
"You're my observer?" He nodded and reattached the identity folder to his belt.
"The whole Alliance Marshal thing is a matter of convenience, really. They gave it to me so I could bully my way through all sorts of obstacles when following you around. I'm really more about capturing the moment." "This will never work. Never, never."
He gave her a look of sympathy.
"Because of my resemblance to your brother? I knew when your name came up for me in the random rotation that it was going to create trouble. Since it's going to cause you distress, I'll have myself put back in the pool." "Yes, I didn't mean it would cause me distress."
She clamped down on herself, uneasily aware that it had already caused her much more distress than she would ever admit.
"I meant this whole observer thing will never work, in general."
"Oh." He fingered the holorecorder on the strap.
"Would you let me record a reaction from you on this whole observer program? Something expressing your thoughts?" "No! That's not part of your observer role, is it?"
"Well, no."
"You aren't recording anything for personal or professional use, are you? Everything you record has to be turned over to the government, right?"
Sure. She glowered at him.
"Look, I'm in the middle of some record-keeping here. I understand. Master Hamner has set up a waiting room for us observers and a chamber off the Great Hall. The Old Youngling Lecture Hall, he called it. Did he mean Old Younglings or Old Hall? Never mind. I'll be there. You need to check in with me if you decide to leave the temple so I can accompany you. And I have to check in with you at intervals to make sure you haven't, you know, wandered off. Sorry.
Stunned, she just nodded. Dab waited a few moments to make sure no further words were going to issue forth, then retreated. The door slid closed behind him, leaving Jaina in merciful silence. Until she spoke again.
Random rotation, my eye. This is somebody's idea of a joke, and whoever it is will find himself dumped in a garbage compactor.
Residential district near the Jedi Temple, Coruscant.
Tahiri hit the button to open her apartment door. It slid aside, revealing a tall, very old man standing outside. His hair was white and thin, his eyes a surprising clear blue. He wore a loose white tunic belted at the waist, along with black trousers and boots. Oddly, although his left arm was prosthetic, no attempt had been made to disguise the fact. It was an ancient replacement, three-quarters of a century old at least, distinctly mechanical despite its graceful human lines. It was the color of brushed Durasteel from the fingertips to where the white sleeve covered it. He gave Tahiri a brief, cordial smile.
Tahiri Vela?
Yes?
I'm Commander Trinhold Mekin, Imperial Navy, retired. I'm your government-appointed observer.
She laughed, then she thumbed the door closed. The bell chimed again, and she could hear the commander's muffled voice.
This is not a joke. I have legal identification.
She opened the door again.
I heard from friends, I mean contacts, about this observer thing. Commander, I'm not a Jedi.
It applies to Sith, too, when they can be identified.
I'm not a Sith, either.
He held up a data card with his flesh-and-blood hand.
Regardless, your name is on the document.
She glanced at the card. It rose up a couple of centimeters into the air. It strained as if struggling, then snapped in two. The pieces dropped into his palm. She fixed him with a look that was no longer friendly.
Not Jedi,
she explained, as if to someone who spoke only a few words of basic.
Not Sith. Do you fly? Thrusters from metal arm, thrusters from nostrils?
Grim, he shook his head.
Then don't come back until you do, because you may find yourself dropping 200 stories out of viewport.
She slid the door shut. This time, the commander did not activate the chime.
Jedi Temple, Coruscant.
Jaina and Master Hamner encountered each other outside the Master's chamber. They both frowned.
Have you seen my new observer? Jaina asked.
Can you tell me where your mother is?
Come down to the Old Youngling Lecture Hall, which he seems to think is a schoolroom for old younglings.
Master Hamner fell into step beside her.
Is that where your mother is?
No, that's where he is,
Jaina said.
And you know he's not to blame.
Perhaps you know where your father is, and could tell me, and he would know where your mother is.
He's not to blame for looking like my brother Anakin.
Your father? Of course he's to blame for looking like your brother. I would have thought it would relieve him. It does most fathers.
Master Hamner, please concentrate. Having an observer who looks like my brother can't be a coincidence. It's a cruel joke or an insult. And if my mother and father see him, it's going to make them feel very bad.
Ah, excellent. Where might your mother and father be that they might see him?
They came to a stop at the doorway of the former Youngling Lecture Hall. The doorway was double wide and open. Inside, the chamber was mostly unoccupied. Round tables had replaced some of the old side-by-side lecture seating. At some of the tables were men and women, many of them older and ex-military by the look of them. The others, a mix of ages, all of them apparently very fit. She pointed to her new observer, who sat with two others, eating a salad and talking.
That one, Tark.
Master Hamner looked and tilted his head.
He does look like Anakin Solo.
So you think it's a coincidence?
You'd have to ask your father about that, too.
No, that he was assigned to me.
Oh.
He shrugged.
Really, I couldn't tell. The assignments are handled out of the Chief of State's office.
Well, I want him swapped out for someone else.
Then you shall have to contact the Chief of State's office. I am certain she will be receptive to the suggestion. The Jedi are among her favorite people.
Jaina bristled.
Do you have any dead relatives you'd like to be followed around by?
He took her arm and led her away from the door at a sedate pace.
You know, you have your mother's mouth, by which I do not mean that the configuration of your chin and lips resemble hers, though they do at certain angles, but that the things that come leaping out of your mouth, words, invective, insults, have a distinctive Organa family flavor to them.
Thank you. What were you asking about, Mom?
Where she is.
At home, I suspect.
Hamner shook his head.
It appears that the Millennium Falcon took off for space at just past dawn this morning, with your father, your mother, and your adopted sister aboard.
Oh, well, perhaps they wanted to take Amelia out for a field trip.
Into space?
Pretty normal for my family.
The comm recorder at their quarters, responding to my code, said to make requests for direct contact to the office of Lando Calrissian, Tendrondo Arms.
Well, there's your answer.
And the office of Tendrondo Arms says they do not know where Lando Calrissian is, but they will pass the message along. So I was wondering if you had any other means to get in touch with your mother, any backdoor method.
Nope, I'm afraid not.
That was a bald lie, but one she had practiced so well and for so many years that she doubted Master Hamner would be able to detect the deception in the Force. He seemed satisfied.
Very well.
I apologize, Master Hamner. Parents like mine, they stay out all hours, they never tell you where they're going, they keep secrets. They're making me old before my time.
The Master blinked, and Jaina sensed that somewhere deep beneath his Jedi calm, he was resisting the urge to throttle her. But all he said was,
Very like your mother.
I need to go off and contact the Chief of State's office. Can I help you with anything else?
No, thank you. I've had all the help I can endure.
Chapter 10. Kessel.
Even from a high altitude, it was clear that Lando's Kessel mine works had changed substantially in the decades since Han had been an involuntary worker within them, before Lando had owned them. When he and Chewbacca had been captured and pressed into service here, the main mine entrance had been a huge open pit, surrounded by broad salt plains and a few administrative buildings. Now the pit was covered, a low, square gray building in place over it, and the buildings immediately around it were far more numerous, though no more attractive. Lando's personal sense of style had clearly been no influence in the motley collection of prefabricated gray, off-white, and tan enclosures. A couple of the larger buildings and several of the smaller ones now lay in ruined heaps, testimony to the power of recent groundquakes in the area. Following Lando's navigational beacon, Han found himself staring at a falcon-sized circle of a bare white salt plain surrounded by irregular chunks of brown synthstone, probably scavenged from some of the felled buildings. He sat down with the speed of confidence, absently, adjusting the length of the Falcon's landing gear extensions so that the transport would be perfectly level on the irregular ground. Adjusting thrusters and repulsors to zero, allowing the Falcon to settle fully onto her landing gear. He smiled. He might be on Kessel again, but at least his landing had been perfect. Beside him, sitting on Leia's lap on the co-pilot's seat, Alana asked,
When can I do it?
Do what? A landing?
She nodded, wide-eyed.
Uh-huh.
When I think my heart will survive the experience.
Han gave Leia a look as if to say, Or maybe I'll be lucky and die before then. Leia gave him a smile that was part amused malice. She looked down at her granddaughter.
Soon, I think he means.
By the time Han got the boarding ramp lowered, Lando and Nian Nunba were at its base, waiting, wearing the breath masks required to survive Kessel's thin atmosphere for more than a few minutes. Nunba, Lando's manager in this enterprise, was Sulistin, with a head that looked oddly as though it had settled in melted layers upon his shoulders. Unlike most of his species, he was only slightly shorter and rounder than the average adult human. Lando sprang up onto the ramp with the vigor of a man half his age.
Han, you made great time.
Han gave him a quick embrace.
We were chased off Coruscant by bureaucracy. You were the lesser of two evils.
I usually am.
Lando offered one of his rakish smiles, obviously pleased still to be considered a bad influence.
Come on inside. Tender and Chance are there.
He glanced up at the top of the ramp.
Hey, R2, long time.
The conference room was laid out with a light lunch and drinks. The chamber did not seem as though it belonged on this dingy, slowly dying world. The oval table in the center was topped with the finest blue-white marble. The chairs were covered in flawless dark leather, and the whole atmosphere conveyed a sense of doing business in the heights of Coruscant's business district. But the oversized display viewport in the longest wall showed the unpromising grounds of the mine works, powdery sterile whiteness from which nothing could grow. In the near distance was the parked Falcon. Farther away was a dark building with featureless brown walls. Every few minutes, a gout of gas erupted from it, sending much-needed oxygen and nitrogen into the unhealthy-looking pink sky. In the far distance on artificial slopes was a building of tremendous size, gray and tan, its outer walls steeply slanted backward with rows of gleaming durasteel and transparasteel that, Han knew, was the old Imperial Correctional Facility, the prison from which the former masters of Kessel had drawn the workers for the mines. Han, Leia, Lando, Tendra, and Nian Nunba sat at the table. In an adjoining chamber, the door left open so sound would carry. Alana and Chance played in the company of the droids, not just C-3PO and R2-D2, but also the little boy's nanny droid, the four-armed automaton with its round, beaming face and almost human female voice looked identical to Nana. The ferocious defensive droid fabricated from a nanny droid and a YVH-1 combat droid to nurse and protect Ben Skywalker in his early years. Leia idly wondered if this was the same one. Tendra, Lando's wife, a lean woman, dark-haired, many years the junior of her husband, was dressed in a pearlescent blue jacket-like top that suggested a world of distant sands and arena duels between animals and men. The blouse beneath it was an iridescent gray, and her long skirt alternated layers of those two colors. Tendra waited until the catching-up chit-chat had completely died away before getting to business.
I guess I ought to offer some context.
Han nodded ruefully as he ate a strip of grilled bantha steak from a skewer.
That's definitely the businesswoman's approach. Do you have a printed agenda to give us?
She smiled.
Quiet, you. Lando has owned these mines for about 30 years now. I bought in when we married. Nian Nunba, who manages the facility, and very well, I might add, gradually acquired shares as part of his contract. The three of us own the business outright.
Leia nodded.
And since Kessel's government basically consists of whatever the major business owners want it to be, there's no one to bail you out if disaster wrecks the business.
Lando looked unhappy.
That's right. And while on the other hand, the only thing we stand to lose is money, it's a lot of money. And on the other hand, if this business becomes unviable for us or anyone else, the amount of glitterstim available in the galaxy drops to zero. All the legitimate medical uses of the drug go away.
Nian Nunba spoke in the rapid, sing-song language of his people. He understood basic, but he had a hard time articulating it. Lando translated.
And, yeah, there'll be a negative reaction on the illicit side of things. Glitbiters, glitterstim addicts, will cause a lot of trouble as they fight over the last remaining stores, and there will be a scramble for a new drug to appease them. They'll probably end up with more dangerous ones, like one of the synthetic rill replacements.
Finished with his skewer, Han set it down.
I thought Kessel was just a rock, an ugly cold rock shaped like a ground tuber spinning peacefully through space. No tectonic or volcanic activity at all.
It is, Lando frowned.
That's what we thought, too, until the quake started,
Tendra said.
This was 2 standard years ago, at the height of the war. Actually, I remember exactly when. I got Nian Nunba's report about the first quake the same day the news broke about the destruction of Centerpoint Station. The first few quakes were very minor, but they've gotten worse over time. The scientists don't know what's causing them, so they can't make any useful predictions. But they have no reason to believe they won't continue to worsen until they wreck everything, collapsing all the mines and destroying the atmosphere plants, which would make the planet uninhabitable.
Nian Nunba spoke again. Lando said,
"Yeah, I left that out, sorry."
He returned his attention to the Solos.
"He's reminding me that the seismologist we brought in detected a system of caverns, really big ones, much deeper than our mine works. Seismic scanners have detected them and also revealed that some have collapsed between readings, which may be part of the whole disaster."
"Why are there caverns in the first place?"
Leia asked. Lando looked confused by the change of subject.
"Huh?"
"Caverns are usually caused by water moving through soft rock, eroding pockets out of it, correct?"
"I guess."
Han grinned at Lando.
"Science hurts, doesn't it, pal?"
"Economics is my science."
Leia continued.
"But Kessel has never had that kind of water."
Lando shrugged.
"Maybe the energy spiders dug them, to have a place to spin their webs where light wouldn't hit them."
Leia gave him a scornful look.
"You're saying the spiders evolved on the surface with photoreactive webs, then, figuring out that light destroyed their webs, dug out elaborate cavern systems to live in, and waited for prey species to begin wandering down there to be eaten?"
She shook her head.
"The photoreactive nature of the webs is clearly a later adaptation, something that happened once they'd been down in the caverns for thousands or millions of years."
Lando held up his hand, signifying surrender.
"I don't know."
"Lando, there are too many mysteries on Kessel. I spent my time on the trip here doing research. You have tombs on the surface no qualified archaeologist has ever opened. You have avian creatures the size of humans on the surface who have a weird attachment to those ruins. You have caverns that shouldn't exist and groundquakes that can't happen. You've brought us here to solve your problem, but I think it would be half solved already if you'd put some money into answering those questions years ago."
During Leia's rant, Lando gradually hunched down, comically drawing his head closer to his shoulders, like a shelled marine reptile trying to withdraw for defense.
"Not many of the avians around anymore," he said. "They're a dying species."
"Which is all right with you, because they don't bring any money into the company."
Lando cast imploring eyes on his wife.
"Help!"
Tendra smiled at him.
"Sorry, darling. You're on your own."
"Oh."
Lando straightened, resuming a normal pose. He turned to Nian Nunba.
"All right. We need a complete archaeological team here to investigate the tombs. Not big, but fully funded for at least one galactic standard year, with a tentative extension of 2 more years if we like their work. We also need a complete xenobiology lab setup and team here. Same terms, to study indigenous life forms other than the energy spiders. Roll the expenses into our losses from the interruption of mining operations."
Finished, he looked expectantly at Leia. She nodded, mollified. Han snorted.
"Well surrendered, General. So lay it out on the table. What exactly do you want from us?"
"I'd like you to go down there. Use your skills and Leia's Jedi abilities to figure out what the scientific teams I've sent down haven't been able to. Figure out why this is happening."
Han had suspected this would be the request, but foreknowledge didn't keep it from turning his stomach sour. To go into those tunnels again. Yet Lando was his friend. A friend in need. A friend who had helped them in very bad times. He glanced at Leia, saw her nod.
"Yeah, sure."
He hoped his voice didn't sound as ungracious as he felt.
"Great," Lando said. "So, what do you need?"
"A vehicle," Han said. "Very small, no bigger than your repulsor lift mine cars, so we can navigate wherever they go. Packed with sensors, active, passive, as broad a range as possible. And weapons, no energy weapons. I'm talking fragmentation explosives, slug throwers, whatever you can manage, since the energy spiders can gobble up pretty much any energy output from handheld or small vehicle weapons. Hand weapons, too, in case Leia gets it in her head that she needs to step out of the vehicle."
"Done," Lando said.
"When can you have it ready?"
"It's waiting at the mine main entrance."
At Han's upraised eyebrows, Lando smiled.
I know your ways, old buddy.
I guess you do.
Can I go?
That was Alana, standing at the doorway to the other room, just on the other side of it, half concealed by the door jamb. Han and Leia exchanged a look. Leia turned her attention to Alana.
Were you listening at the door?
Alana hesitated, then nodded. She stepped forward, her movement tentative.
3PO started telling a story, and I got sleepy. But I didn't want to nap, so I moved to where I could listen to you, because you're more interesting.
I'm sorry, sweetie.
Han gave Alana a look that he hoped was both affectionate and sternly paternal.
It's dangerous. No place for a little girl. You'll need to stay with 3PO and R2 and Chance.
I'd rather be with you.
I know, Amelia, but it's not going to happen this time. On a mission, sometimes people serve best by remaining where others know they're safe. That's a contribution, too.
Han turned back to the others, and the amused, knowing looks on all their faces eloquently said, not that anyone is ever willing to do that. The vehicle Lando had prepared, resting on the white, dusty soil in front of the mine entrance building, had apparently started its existence as an airspeeder. It had the same low, rectangular frame with a central passenger compartment that was ubiquitous to that class of vehicle. But this was a hardtop model, and emerging from the center of the roof was a small turret. Protruding from that were twin barrels, one no wider in diameter than Han's thumb, one wide enough nearly to fit his fist. He recognized them as a slug-throwing blaster and a grenade launcher, ancient designs seldom seen toward the galactic core, but more prevalent in outer rim worlds and less developed planets. The turret looked like a recent patch job. There were signs of new welding around it, and the turret, a dull metallic gray, had not been painted tan like the rest of the vehicle. On the metal surfaces over the engine compartment and cargo compartment were other recent additions, blue transparisteel bubbles that housed sensor equipment. They were on patches of metal where paint had been burned away and leads punched through so wiring and connectors could pass from the sensors into the vehicle's interior. Han experimentally wrapped on the speeder's frame and viewports with his knuckles. Both areas returned reassuringly deep thumps.
Armored?
Leia asked. Tendra nodded.
Used to be a speeder for shuttling visiting dignitaries between the prison and the landing field. It's old, but sturdy. Sort of like Lando.
She winked in her husband's direction. Lando shot her a dirty look, but addressed Han instead.
The grenade launcher has two modes, two sorts of ammunition. The switch is on the weapons control yoke. One mode is fragmentation explosives. Very nasty. Be at least 50 meters away from one of those when it goes off, even if you're inside the vehicle. The other is a decoy we came up with for dealing with the spiders in a non-violent way. Fires a flying drone with a very powerful heat package in it. Gives off an energy signature brighter than a squad of miners. It automatically steers to avoid walls and has a flight duration of about a minute. Fire it off, let the spider chase after it, and go the other way.
Well, it's no Falcon, Han said. But it'll have to do.
Inside, piled on the rear seat, were thermal suits, infrared goggles, spare breath masks with numerous replacement oxygen canisters and batteries, extra energy packs for the thermal suits, cases of food and water, and backpack weapons firing ammunition similar to the vehicle's turret systems. Han caught Lando's eye.
How long do you actually expect us to stay down there?
As long as you want or need to. I actually packed the vehicle for myself. Over the last couple of weeks, Nia and Tendra and I have all taken her down there, looking for a cause for the trouble and planting sensors for the seismologists, with no luck.
Fair enough.
Han took a deep breath, trying to dispel memories of the desperate flight he, Chewbacca, and Kip Duran had taken through those shafts and tunnels more than 30 years before. It didn't help.
Let's go.
Clad in thermal suits, pallid yellow jumpsuits of a slick, heat-retentive cloth, further warmed by a network of tubes laced through the surface, and breath masks, Han and Leia boarded the speeder, Han at the controls. In moments, the passenger compartment pressurized, and they could remove their breath masks. They gave one last wave to the Calrissians and Nia Nunba. Then Han started the vehicle's motivators and set it into forward motion. Ahead was the building surrounding the main mine entrance. Han followed its old rail tracks to the door, which obligingly rolled open before them. Once through, Han activated the speeder's external lights. They illuminated a vast single chamber, its ceiling crisscrossed with metal beams with mobile winches hanging from them. There was no floor, just a crater. A gigantic bowl cut out of the gray-white stone, vanishing into darkness at its deepest point, the exact center. The rail tracks led straight down the hole. His shoulders riding up and going rigid with tension, Han followed the rails. In moments, the angled bowl dropped out from beneath them, and they descended on repulsors alone down a vertical shaft that seemed endless.
Chapter 11. Jedi Temple, Coruscant.
As Kenth Hamner settled more and more into the role of interim master of the Jedi Order, he began rearranging things to suit himself, to increase his comfort and efficiency in the position. For example, morning briefings. Each day after breakfast was served and consumed, he stood in the Great Hall and allowed the Jedi to gather so he could catch them up on all the news he felt he could distribute. Perhaps sending files to all their data pads would have been more efficient, but he liked to see reactions and get immediate responses. Of course, the observers now stood among the Jedi, an odd contrast in their mix of dress, some civilian, some in daywear comfortably resembling their old military uniforms, some in the current uniforms of Galactic Alliance Security or Intelligence Divisions. This day, Master Hamner began,
"As you may have heard on this morning's HoloNet news broadcast, there are rumors that the government is preparing a case against Jedi Valen Horn for criminal actions and damages caused by recent events. We will, of course, resist these proceedings, as it is clear that Jedi Horn was and remains of diminished capacity. Both the government and the Jedi Order agree that qualified analysts of mental disorders must be allowed to examine Jedi Horn to evaluate the relevance of his mental state. We are in the process of deciding on specialists agreeable to both sides."
He consulted his datapad, then looked around, his manner more stern.
"On another matter, I will not single out anyone for direct disapprobation, but it is clear that some of the Jedi Knights have been indulging in behavior that makes it more difficult for their observers to do their jobs. Though the Order approves of passive resistance in circumstances of civic unrest, it is not appropriate for Jedi themselves to perform passive resistance against rules agreed to by the Order itself. This will be my last warning, unaccompanied by corrective measures."